Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, connecting leaders together to have conversations about building strong local communities through doing good business. I'm your host, Thomas Barr, Executive Director of Local First Arizona, statewide organization advocating for and celebrating locally owned businesses. We are the largest local business coalition in North America and raise awareness of the benefits of building a strong local economy. Our hopes today are to inspire more companies to do good business by highlighting local companies that are building a better Arizona. And you are listening to a special series right now where we are featuring speakers for the 2020 Arizona Good Business Summit. Super excited to have my friends Drew Shaw, the owner and founder of Voice Threads, and Troy Potkin, the founder of Narwhal Stories. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to open it up to you guys. I'm not going to read your bios for you. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, why you're excited about the Good Business Summit in 2020.
Wow, it's a long and winding road.
Do we have enough time?
I know, right? I was like, where do I start? No, so I moved to Phoenix in 2005. I was in Teach for America. And so my background is in education. I taught elementary school for 6 years. And then I went on to teach at Arizona State University in the Teachers College. And after that stint in education, both teaching children and teaching adults, I decided to venture off and start my own education consulting company, which I still do today. And then a year after I started that company, I released my first children's book, Rosewood Circle, The First Day. And from that book, it was the inspiration to start my sock company, Voice Threads, which is my most recent baby. I have several babies at this point. You can't tell from my figure. But so what we do at Voice Threads is we partner with nonprofits and charitable organizations, and we use their work as the design inspiration for our socks. And our socks are mismatched because we want people to have conversations, not about the socks, but about the great things that are going on in the community every single day. And so I'm really excited to be a part of the Good Business Summit, because it's a lot of times really isolating and really lonely in the entrepreneurship space. Mm-hmm. And it's great to gather collectively and just talk about challenges and successes and to celebrate one another and to share best practices. And I went last year and it was amazing. So
cool. Tell us really quickly before we get to Troy, mismatched socks.
Yes, sir.
Why?
Yeah, so the original concept came from the book, of course. Cool. And the main character wears mismatched socks. And so I originally was going to create a line of kids' socks to go along with the book so that when kids bought the book, they could wear the socks and feel like they're a part of the story. But I knew I could take that idea a little bit further. So I went through a program called Seed Spot, and they helped me refine my idea to make it a social impact venture. And about a year later, that's where Voice Threads was created.
Yeah. So how many pairs or styles of mismatched socks have you created so far?
Yeah, so we currently have 10 pairs of mismatched socks available for purchase. We have partnerships all the way through next year. So there are socks yet still to be made, which I'm really excited about as well. But yeah.
Right on. Well, congrats and thanks for being here. Troy, how are you, my friend?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. And you are 1.5 years into your new business?
1.5, yes.
Cool. Let's hear about it.
Well, I came to Arizona in 2003 to see about a girl. met my now wife, who was in med school at U of A, and I was a copywriter working at an ad agency in California, in LA. And then we got married, moved out here, have both sets of parents, and I joined with an ad agency and worked for 14 years as a copywriter and creative director. And then was inspired through my Valley leadership experience, where I met Drew and many other fantastic classmates. Inspired by them to go off on my own and start my own creative consultancy called Narwhal Stories. And it was really a response to a lot of friends of mine, colleagues coming to me as small business owners asking for marketing help, creative development, branding, and asking, can I afford your agency? And I said, I don't think you can, but you're my friend and I want to help. And that side hustle of helping friends and colleagues work on their messaging was the inspiration for Narwhal Stories.
Cool. So that side hustle turned full time?
It did turn full time, and I still tell my classmates, if it fails, it's all your fault, because they really did inspire me. But I say, when we do the practice of copywriting, if we do it well, it looks very easy. And as a small business owner, you tend to try to do everything, because mm-hmm. you don't typically have the resources or the network to share in accounting and hiring and legal incorporation and mm-hmm. branding and marketing. So you tend to do it all. And this is one of the things that looks really easy, but we go to school for this. I spent 2 years at a portfolio school after a full degree in business many years prior. It's not very easy. And so I know the value that I can provide, and I love sharing it. And I especially for people who I love and believe in, and that's my job to today is to help them tell their stories as most effectively as possible.
That's cool. That's really cool. I love that you brought up Valley Leadership too. You were both class 39?
Correct.
Best class ever.
Best class ever.
I was class 40, which somebody said were the best just got better. I don't know what class 41 is, but obviously you can't top either of those things. So there's only downhill from there. So,
correct.
But super cool, because it's how I actually got introduced to you, Troy. And then we probably know like 15 people outside of that, Drew, but it's something that brought us together too. It's this weird like binding force in the Valley, at least, of all of these people. And the reason I brought you both on together, not only because I know your friends and know each other, but there's something really unique and special behind small business owners who make very clear intentions to run good businesses and care about the community. And when I get naturally attracted to and energized behind that. And so I just admire both of you for what you're doing. We're super excited this year. Valley Leadership is coming on as a sponsor for the Business Summit, and we're going to open it up to all of class 41 to come this year.
Oh, wow.
So, fantastic.
Yeah. So we went to them and we said, you know, when I went through Valley Leadership, I would really love to go to this conference. So wouldn't you want to make that accessible to your class too? So they're super excited. So we're going to see a bunch of VL current participants there. And then we're going to have special recognition for everybody that's been through Valley Leadership speaking at the event too.
Very cool.
It'll be really, awesome. Really cool. So Drew, you brought up something that I have conversations about a lot, and this is open to both of you to talk a little bit about. And that's the sometimes loneliness and or silo-ness, if you will, that comes with being an entrepreneur. And I was having this conversation with a consultant because at Local First, we are actually super entrepreneurial ourselves in how we operate. And it's almost like when we are looking for new employees, sometimes we need to put them through an entrepreneurial test. And I was joking. I was just like, I need to ask the question in interviews, how do you do when you're by yourself or alone for a very long time? Because that grind of building something and or, you know, having a vision for how you want something to grow can be incredibly lonely. So maybe talk about a little bit of your experience in that, either of you, both of you, how you've found outlets to build connections through that so that you don't feel like you're alone, and how that may have even empowered you to keep moving forward in your business at all, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, at this point, I think that because I've been in full-time entrepreneurship for over 3 years now, I don't think that the loneliness ever quite goes away. I think that you have periods where it's more prevalent than others. But if something is your idea and it's your creative child and it's something that was birthed from your passion, like there's no one who's going to quite understand it the way that you do. And there's no one who will have as much passion about it as you will. And so just being in that headspace can sometimes be really isolating. But what I found is that I'm a natural introvert, but I intentionally put myself in large spaces of people, mm-hmm. Whether that's people who I know through Valley Leadership or through different programs that I've been through or networking events, which is something that drains the life out of me. But mm-hmm. I love going to them. Once I get there, I'm energized. But I put myself in those situations because I know that it's not about the money that I have that will move me forward, but it's about the people who I know. Yeah. And whenever I get to those crossroads or those moments where I need a resource, I know that those people are going to be the resources that I need. Mm-hmm. And so I started changing my mindset a little bit about that period of isolation. It's like I just have to go through it just so I can, you know, really process what I want to do next. But when I decide what I want to do next, I know the people who I need to go to.
Yeah.
And so I've created my own tribe, like Troy's in my tribe. I'm like, hey, I have this question about this copy, or he actually helped me write some of my copy. And so just having resources like that is really essential. And whenever I just need to vent or bounce ideas off of someone, it's really important to not stay in that isolated place, but reach out as much as possible.
Totally.
Especially people who know what it feels like.
Yeah, it fascinates me how many leaders I've met that are introverts that have forced themselves. And I'm looking over at you, Troy, because I don't think you're an introvert.
No, I don't think so.
Last time I checked, I don't think so.
But the number of people I've talked to are like, yeah, I'm naturally introvert. I have to force myself in these situations. And I am too. And it's not that we don't like people.
Right.
It's just we get our energy from actually being alone, right. And then we need that outlet. But whenever I get asked similar questions or, you know, how business leadership development, you know, what advice would you give or anything, I always say, make yourself as uncomfortable as possible.
Absolutely.
Because those are going to be the areas that you put yourself in where you're actually going to learn and grow and develop. And everybody knows this who's striving to be a leader, is that those opportunities of discomfort and all of that is where you actually learn the most, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. But
I say I'm never comfortable being comfortable. Mm-hmm. And that has actually served me well. I used to think it was a fault, but it's actually served me really well. And I kind of equate to what we're talking about to a dartboard. And there's an outer ring of your networking events and the big people type events. And I think of Valley Leadership and Seed Spot and Conscious Capitalism, Opportunity Hack through Galvanize. Those are big events that sometimes push me out of my comfort zone because I'm able to participate, but I'm able to learn, which is really fundamental to any endeavor that I choose to spend my time with, whether it's a business or a nonprofit or what have you, is do I have the opportunity to contribute something immediately, but also learn? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really critical. But there are those big, that's the outer ring, those big networking events. Then there's your sort of inner circle, the people that you trust for really honest feedback. I love that Drew and I are here today because we are sort of that inner circle mm-hmm. to each other. I was very honored that he came to me and asked me for assistance with his site because I knew how important it was to him. And I also credit him with being open to some of the challenges that I put before him with the user experience or with the description, or just I physically went through and purchased socks online and then gave him honest feedback of what worked and what didn't.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. And it's not easy as a business owner, especially with a baby that you've been, you know, bringing to life for years, potentially, to hear that honest feedback, but to not only be open to it, but then incorporate those changes. And then you have your very, very close, you know, bullseye, mm-hmm. your spouse, your, you know, loved ones, but also that, I mean, I really count Drew within the bullseye in terms of, because I know there were times where we took each other to lunch when was up and one was down, and we would be very, you know, honest and open with each other about, is this the right thing?
Yeah.
Am I doing the right thing? Because it can be very, very lonely. And one thing that I think is really critical for small business owners is to remember is to never measure your intrinsic worth based on your current financial worth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized stepping out that part of my identity, part of my confidence, part of walking through life as a husband, as a father, as a boss, as a creative, was tied to my financial compensation, for better or worse. And when you step out on your own and that is not happening, it is very easy to question not only your decision, but also your own abilities, your own talents, your own character. And that's where that inner circle of my Valley Leadership classmates, the ones I jokingly said I would blame them if it didn't work out, they were there. They showed up when I was giving talks to 25 people for free on thinking and writing like a copywriter at a co-working space. And five of those 25 were my classmates. And they didn't necessarily need the message. They were there to support. And that goes a huge, huge way in getting you through those tough times.
Right. I was having a conversation with another, well, so she's in the 41st cohort right now, Catherine Alonzo, who's also speaking at the summit.
She's great.
Yeah, she's so great. And we were having a conversation about when you are an entrepreneur or advance into, you know, a time in your life when you're going to be in a leadership position, the different strategies to build your, that core network, right? And how sometimes it happens really naturally. And you just know the people around you that you can rely on. But there's also the people that you may build into your close network that you know you're going to need for that assistance, and how you need to take proactive steps to ensure that you're building a strong relationship with them so that you're not just calling on them when you need them, but that you're also giving to them too. And so identifying, you know, as you position yourself as a leader or an entrepreneur or whatever it is, you're not just identifying what do I need to be successful, but who do I need to support through this time? Because I know I'm going to need support from them later. And it's also just better for the community for me to give to them. And I think that's something that tends to get overlooked because you're like, oh, I need all these resources and I need all these people and everything. And, and you tend to skip over who should I be giving to right now or what time should I be giving right now for these other people. So super interesting perspective. Yeah. So you, I love what you were talking about, Troy. And I hope that you might be able to give us a little bit about what you're planning on kind of diving into at the Business Summit. Maybe just a little bit, if you have an idea or perspective of what you might be able to share people.
So my talk is called Solving Your Problems with Ads. And it's my best effort in, I kind of live as much as possible in the 80-20 rule of how much can I, how can I give you 80% of what I you may need in 20% of my time. And there's definitely some quick hacks with identifying what works and what doesn't work in advertising. And so my goal with that, because I've I have modified talks kind of depending on the audience of thinking and writing like a copywriter. I did one called Where My Pitch Is At, about improving your actual presentation, because I think the biggest tragedy in my mind for a hacking team that's trying to win a prize against other coders, or whether it's a small business trying to win a contract, is that the big tragedy would be that you are the best option, but you finish second because of your pitch, and that you kind of stumble at the finish line. And so this is not soft stuff. This is not the thing you think about in the last 5 minutes of your preparation. It is super important that you put your best face forward. And so if that's advertising, if that's your website, if that's your social posts, if that's your pitch, I've written CEOs' speeches for their big galas. I've written annual reports. Any communication needs to be your best face forward. And so the talk at the Good Business Summit is about little hacks that you can use if you are writing your own material or if you're crafting your own social strategy. And then we do that in the lens of pop culture, which is always fun, and which is dissecting ads that really work and that do not. In fact, I was asked this morning to dissect the latest Peloton ad, which got a ton of press. And it's like, well, we all feel weird about this. Why do we feel weird about it? And I kind of went through what in my experience did not work about that. And so we'll use those kind of examples, and I'm happy and excited for the audience to bring in their own work if they're willing to do that. In ad school, we had teachers who would give you an assignment, and then your job when you walked into class was put those assignments on a wall And he would spend the first 10 minutes of class silently walking back and forth along that wall, pulling ads off the wall and dropping them on the floor and stepping on them as we went from 100 ads to 6.
Wow.
And he would say, "You see this stuff on the floor? Don't bring me this next time. You should know better.
Wow.
These 6 that are left, this is worth my time. This is worth our time." And so if you're willing to do that, I'm willing to be a lot nicer about it. I won't step on your ads, I promise.
He'll crumble them up and throw them in the trash.
Exactly. But we will make this participatory as much as possible so that you can actually walk away with some tangible, useful things for your next
communication. Super cool. I'm excited for that because the biggest feedback we got last year, and I don't know if you guys filled out the survey as participants last year, but people wanted more interaction, more things they could walk away with. Not that last year was bad in any way, but wanted more tangible things. And so that's really, really exciting.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Because it's coming.
But I love that you brought up the ad piece too, and I want to dig into that. It's one of the things that comes up as a topic when we're on the show a lot is talking about the dichotomy of these businesses, the ethics of actually being a good business, and in contrast to businesses or corporations that may present themselves as good businesses through advertisements or attempt to, but actually most of the time fail at doing it because they've missed the mark, being that we're in a time of transparency. People can see right through your fake, your false ad if you're not really living up to it. So kind of just curious about your thoughts on you know, the times we're in now and, you know, that being in a time of transparency and consumers and clients wanting to do business and wanting to purchase products from businesses that their values aligned with, not necessarily with the business that says on the commercial that they're good, but is naturally actually very good in the community. How do you, are there any examples of businesses that either of you think do that really well in operating in a good way and also presenting themselves in a good way?
Yeah, I think our, I know he's going to love me for saying this. I think our good friend Adam Goodman is a great example of this. When I started my company, VoiceThreads, because we're a benefit corporation as well, he's the first person I went to ask, how do you get your company that's so successful, so community-centered, so employee-centered to, like, I know it didn't start that way. How did you get your company to make that transition? And he said it took a super long time, but it was one step at a time, implementing one thing, and slowly over the course of time, that's what his company became. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing in the business landscape now is that transition. Some companies are just now starting that transition, and they have a long way to go, especially larger companies.
And
it's interesting too, because I get a lot of people coming to me and asking me about, like, how do you become a socially conscious lifestyle brand, or how do you make your company community focused or social impact driven? And I tell them all the time, it's like, if you are creating a business and you put your product first, that is not what being a socially conscious company is. It's like, when you put the community first and then your product support the community, that's what it is.
Right.
And so a lot of times I have to tell people to rethink how they're thinking about their brand and how they position themselves, because a lot of times they just want to add on this extra piece of sustainability or add on this extra piece of let's give back to a nonprofit kind of thing.
Right.
That's not what it's supposed to be. Sure, that's a great, and I'm glad that companies are doing that, but it's so much more than that. If at the core of who you're, of what your company is going to be about community and others, that's what being socially conscious is about.
That's what's frustrated me so much. Ever since Simon Sinek came out with his TED Talk and everyone's like, oh, start with why.
Yep.
I've just got to talk about why I'm in business and all these things rather than actually changing. And the people that actually understood what he was saying got it and said, oh, wow, I'm operating in a way that's actually not beneficial to society. I need to reinvent myself. And the people that didn't get it were like, oh, I just need to change my mission statement so that people actually think I'm focused on people.
Right.
And I'm just going to keep doing the same thing. And those companies have failed and failed over time. I think it's intrinsically important to note the difference between growing a company that's conscious and changing a company that's conscious. There's a big ship to steer around versus building one as you're kind of rowing along, right? So not to tease this out or anything, but and I haven't even talked to you about this, Drew, but so Drew is participating in the summit in this very topic. Surprise. No. So we've got a few other entrepreneurs that are going to be speaking with Drew. Seifer from Seedspot is going to be out there. And then Jenny Poon from Cahoots talking about how do you scale a conscious business in today's world? What is that experience actually like for those growing companies? So
yeah, I mean, and making that decision to be a company like that is harder than just starting a company. It puts you somewhat at a disadvantage when you're trying to grow a company that way, because you're trying to, because it doesn't allow you to go fast, because you have to be so purposeful and intentional about every step that you take, because your customers will call you out when you're not living up to what your mission is, if that's what you've put out into the world. And so, there's, as a business, like the business side of it is not advantageous to go that route. Mm-hmm. But if you want to benefit the world and the people that you serve, then that's the way you have to go. Yeah. But
I think that point is really important about if you're going to put it out there, you will get called out on it if you're not living it. And I think to a recent work that I did with 1AZ Credit Union, and they invited me in to develop creative for their 2019 branding. And we pitched three campaigns, and I saved the most important one for last, which is the campaign Be Wonderful. And we changed the spelling of wonderful to be O-N-E-D-E-R-F-U-L to match the 1AZ name. But I prefaced that pitch of that campaign by saying this next one requires deeper thought. You're hopefully going to have an emotional reaction to it, but you need to think very strongly before you would choose it, because this is not some pithy tagline. This is a platform. And if you choose this one, it comes with the obligation to actually live it. Because you will get called out on it if you are not wonderful.
Sure. Yeah.
From the CEO down to the bank teller, taking your deposit. And the confidence that I had in that campaign really came from their team, because we developed it with their creative team, who I love over there. And it came from insights about the way that they were operating. And so we talk about growing versus being.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they were living this. They just didn't have a name around it.
Sure.
And so really all we did was put a name to it. So I felt very confident that they could deliver on that, because they already were.
Yeah.
They're in communities where big banks either don't go or have pulled out.
Right.
And that next to a library, a post office, maybe a Goodwill, this is the only other guaranteed game in town in some of these communities is your 1AZ branch.
Right.
And that's where they do canned food drives. That's where they rally for the local baseball team, for car washes. Mm-hmm. So they're living that. And that is hugely important, because, and to their credit, they embrace that. And now we have partnerships with State 48 to do their company's shirts, which they now wear 2 days a week, because they love between the Be Wonderful shirts and the State 48 shirts. Like, there's a lot of pride that all we did was tease out that was already there. I often consult with clients and say the best way to kill a mediocre product or service or company is with great advertising. So you have to be very, very careful and very deliberate about who you are first before you grab the bullhorn.
Right.
Because if we write the best ad that's ever hit the airwaves, and it actually attracts audiences and who then immediately
start
see
looking
your
at
exposed
who you really
weaknesses,
are. Yeah.
You will never get that opportunity again.
Right.
And so it's not just about saying who you are. It's about living it almost before you dare to say it.
So true. So true. I love that. I mean, 1AZ, they're awesome. They're partner of the summit too. They're going to be there. And Michael Spangenberg from State 48 is going to be part of their session. So they truly bring it all together. Yeah. And you're right about the piece of staying in communities. They have more presence in rural Arizona than any other credit union or bank in the state because they've committed to those areas. It's super cool. But I always give Troy a hard time. But you guys did the campaign well and so great, and it works so well. But I always give Troy a hard time. Have either of you seen the movie That Thing You Do?
Man, it's been a long time,
right? So it was written, directed, and starred Tom Hanks.
Yes.
By Tom Hanks. Way back, I don't even know when it was. But they had the same idea. So it's about a four-piece band, and they have a single. It goes viral. Yeah. And they tour the country, and then they break up at the end. But it's a really great film. And Tom Hanks wrote it and directed it and did all this stuff. So it's really cool because he's in it too. And it's in the beginning of the movie, and they can't think of a name to call themselves. And they're in band practice or whatever. And they're like, that's it. The Wonders. But we're not going to spell it W-O-N-D-E-R-S. We're going to spell it with O-N-E, like the Beatles, B-E-A-T-L-E-S. And they're like, yeah, this is the greatest idea. And then the entire time through the movie, people call them the O-Neaters because they don't know right. that it's the Wonders. But you guys actually bolded O-N-E right. in the marketing and branding. So
yes.
You know that it's 1-A-Z is also the name of the credit union, which makes total sense. But I always, every time I see it, I'm just like thinking back to the movie. I wonder if somebody's thinking this is O-Neaterful right now.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And the quick story on that was when I work with clients, I'll open up a Google Doc that they can check in at any time.
Okay.
And they may see me dumping ideas in there, like literally typing in the doc. And I was working on that those campaigns one night. I came up with that. It was really at Michael Eck over at YZ.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good friend of mine. He challenged me to come up with sort of this new word
okay.
for 1AZ. I was in the doc and I wrote that down, and I immediately saw that other pronunciation of it.
Yeah.
And I started futzing with the color
okay.
and the boldness
yeah.
of it. Just
yeah.
as a writer, I'm not a designer.
Sure.
And so I say the designers always cringe when I start doing that. But it needed something like
that. It needed
that.
To pop. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sure.
And then
yeah.
Michael popped into the doc and he was commenting. He's like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And so I kind of knew I was onto something. But I think if he had popped in like 90 seconds before,
right.
be like, what the hell?
Yeah, what is that? Yeah.
O-enderful.
It's so funny.
O-neederful.
Yeah, and it's so funny because Tom Hanks gets hired as their new manager to like take them on their national tour. And he's just like, what is this O-neederful thing? You guys are just the Wonders now. We're spelling it differently. So,
wow.
So funny. So, Troy, I want to get back into VoiceThreads and hear more about where you guys are. You got 10 socks you guys have done already. Bouncing into 2020, already have a bunch going on. What's going on with you guys? What's the future look like?
Lots more socks. so that's definitely nothing that's going to go away for sure. But we're definitely going to be branching out to do other kinds of apparel because we're much more than a sock company. That's why it's called VoiceThreads.
Mm-hmm.
Like socks are just the entry point to allowing people to dress differently to show people what they care about, right?
Cool.
So I'm kind of scared to like share secrets, but you'll see next year. There will be other types of apparel. There will be other types of socks
okay.
as well. And we also have some out-of-state partnerships.
Cool.
One is in Denver, Colorado, which does phenomenal work. And yeah, so we're just branching out and going into new markets. And I tell people all the time, if you can sell socks in the desert, you can sell socks anywhere. So this is a great proving ground for the sock concept. And yeah, it's just a matter of making sure that we are constantly expanding, not just for ourselves, but also for how do we tell our nonprofit partners stories better in a more compelling way by mm-hmm. incorporating video. We haven't really tapped into that either. More dynamic photos and kind of, you know, the story that Troy mentions all the time. It's like, how do we make sure that story is getting told over and over again and in new and innovative ways?
Cool.
So yeah, just really drilling down into that and building my team and being at more events and, you know, hitting the 1-year mark has allowed me to reflect and say, wow, it's one thing when you start, you have to ask people, hey, I have this idea. I don't have any designs to show you. Will you partner with me, even though I don't have any socks to show you or any examples? And that's when we, going back to our first conversation about your networks and your people that
yeah.
you meet, if it had not been for Valley Leadership, I wouldn't have my first five partners.
Wow.
Like, that's the place where I found my first five partnerships.
Wow.
And so now, instead of having to go and ask people, people come to me. And my references for my first five socks in my first network, they are the people who refer people to me all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's when I reflect back, I'm so grateful for that switch happening where people are seeking me out instead of me having to go and beg people to believe in what I'm doing. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Who was your first partner?
My first partner for socks was actually Christy Johnson Moore.
Cool.
She is the owner of Social Spin, and she's actually not a nonprofit. She's a benefit corporation,
right,
like me, but she does such impactful work in the community, and she's kind of my guinea pig on whether people cared about our partnerships being nonprofits or not.
Yeah.
And they don't. They just care about the impact that these organizations are making, and hers makes tremendous impact. And yeah, when we met, she was just starting up her laundromat, and I was just starting up VoiceThreads, and we sat and commiserated about the struggle. and after the conversation was done, she was like, okay, so where do I sign? I want to get this ball rolling today. I'm like, actually, I don't have anything for you to sign.
Wow.
Give me a month. I'll send you an agreement, and we'll be done. But she was so, she believed in the vision before a lot of other people.
She does such
and
great work.
She's a visionary herself, so she got it immediately. And I'm so grateful for her, and we're still great friends to this day.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I got to take a little credit for that.
Oh, that's true. Troy is the person who introduced us. That is very
true. She's the former president of Valley Leadership.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
And I got introduced to her when I was considering going off on my own. I got recommended to her because she did effectively a very similar thing. Even though she hadn't gone through Valley Leadership herself, she was in the leadership role and decided to step out and transform laundromats in lower income communities, which was just amazing. And of course, I already knew Drew by that point. So I took coffee with her and I said, wait a minute.
Okay. Troy and I were barely friends at this point, but Troy is a consummate connector. And he's like, oh, I think you need to meet her. I was like, oh, great.
But it literally connected in my brain of laundromats and socks.
Right.
The two things that are most
perfect
connected.
Combination.
Lost, Troy, mismatched socks and laundromats.
Troy seems to insert himself in those situations
really
quite often.
Does.
There's a great ad running right now for the partnership between 1AZ and Local First Arizona. And you might see the back of somebody's head shaking my hand at one point in time. That's Troy.
A handsome individual.
And Troy forgot to mention that I was in his pilot for the 1AZ commercial he pitched.
Oh, no way.
That's correct.
No way.
Yes, we use family and friends. But no, you know, back to the coffee thing real quick, just the networking, it's so important because first of all, I'm just genuinely curious about people and love connecting with, you know, like-minded individuals. But my wife will sometimes roll her eyes. She's been my biggest fan and biggest supporter, so I want to preface that. But she'll sometimes say to me, how many coffees do you have to take? And I said, all of them, because you just don't know. And it's not, I think going back to the way we approach the networks and talking about, you know, what can I do for someone? That's really where it has to start. I don't look at any of those situations of what can that person do for me? It's just genuinely connecting with people. You know, through Valley Leadership, I also met Rhonda Bannard, who is an earlier class 20-something, I think. And she stepped out on her own in the middle of her Valley Leadership experience. And, you know, she helped give me some, I mean, I have some great mentors through that program. And she gave me that advice of you just look for ways to be useful. And then it will come back to you, and you have to trust in that. And you'll sort of develop your own radar as to which ones are, you know, worth your time and worth your energy. And but never enter it going into what am I going to receive?
Yeah.
I've always looked at it from the standpoint of I kind of have three things to give. I can give time, talent, and treasure. And I don't usually have ample amounts of all three. It's usually, you know, one bucket's pretty full and the other two are maybe kind of empty.
Yeah.
But you try to give what it is that you have and it will come back to you, and it may take time, but it's just a good way to do business.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's that selflessness is something that I think is one of the best learning experiences of this journey of the last 18 months is, you know, because before when I worked for an agency, I was always mining the conversation in my head mm-hmm. of, is this a new business opportunity? Is this something that I can get something back from? And I don't look at those things anymore. I give it away and, you know, wait for it to come back. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But the nice thing is sometimes it'll come back huge in one area and not at all. And everything sort of bounces out. It's a math term, regression to the mean. Like it's always going to sort of work out. You just never know how.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's one of your best attributes, Troy, is if you haven't met Troy yet, and hopefully you do at the summit this year, when you talk to him, he is so interested in getting to know you and what you have to say. That's
very true.
Something you have.
Thank you.
Very special. So we're super excited for the Good Business Summit next year. But let's let people know how they can find you if they're trying to reach out to you now. Drew, how can people find you?
Well, they can find me personally on LinkedIn. Just search Drew Shaw. I'm wearing a red blazer in my picture. You won't miss me.
Very specific detail.
I want to pop on social media, you know. But you can also, for Voice Threads, you can find us, Voice Threads. Make sure you spell it V-O-Y-C-E, Threads, because people are like, oh, well, I searched for you. I couldn't find you. I was like, how do you spell voice? Oh, with an I. Nope. Why? So we're Voice Threads on all social media. So
cool.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, even have Pinterest.
Pinterest really still easy. Around?
Pinterest is very alive and
is
well,
Pinterest
actually.
Popping?
Mm-hmm. It is very popping. for those of us who like, I call Pinterest my what is one of my happy places that I go to, because you just build stuff that makes you feel good and look, and you get ideas. It's one of my creative spaces that I go to. And so because we position ourselves sort of as a fashion brand too, we kind of like to have people have ideas for how to style our socks and things like that.
Cool, yeah. Cool. And Troy, what about you?
Yeah, so it's Narwhal Stories, and that's spelled like narwhal without the E.
Cool.
There's a lot of confusion smart. About it. Where is the H? It's Narwhal Stories.com.
Cool.
I'm also the only Troy Potkin that I know of on the planet.
Oh, wow.
Due to a misspelling at Ellis Island. So
no way.
There's a very, very tight-knit group of Potkins, and we are all related.
Wow.
And I'm the only Troy that I know of, at least for now. So if you can't find me on all the social platforms that Drew mentioned, you don't do the internet very well.
That's super unique. I wish I had that. So I have Google Alerts set up for my name just in case, you know, pop up in the media somewhere I was mentioned in a story so we could share it and all that.
And you Google yourself once in a while.
Oh, yeah, maybe. so it was totally fine. I would not get any notifications at all very often. But about 4 years ago in Ireland came on the scene a very successful Olympic runner named Thomas Barr.
Wow.
So about once a week, I get notified about his races.
Fantastic.
That's funny. Like there's another Drew Shaw who is like very athletic. There's like a wrestler. There's an Olympic level sharpshooter named Drew Shaw. Yeah.
Take credit where credit's due. You know?
I think there's Drew Shaw Palooza in the making right there.
I mean... Reunions, it needs to happen.
There we go. Well, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Excited to see you both at the summit speaking. Super, super excited about it. We'll see all of you out there listening today at the 2020 Arizona Good Business Summit, January 22nd and 23rd at Phoenix Convention Center. We're going to have over 500 attendees, 36 breakout sessions, 5 keynote sessions, 1 huge networking event. We've got to have you there. Tickets available at localfirstaz.com/good. Business. We hope you were inspired today by these local leaders that are redefining what it means to do good business. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Conscious Capitalism of Arizona, Max 6, and Phoenix Business Radio X. This is Thomas Barr from Local First AZ reminding you that if we want to build a better Arizona, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place our home.